Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidyavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
This is from Lord Nityananda.
Lord Nityananda, thank you. Okay, now we're on Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1. Introduction to the three aspects of Tattva, Anuchedas 1 through 7. Adhyaya Prakashika. Having described the truth in a general way as Advaya Jnana, Varanti Tat Tattva Viras Tattvam Yajjnanam Advayam, in the Tattva Sandarbha. Now the author, Srila Jiva Goswami, describes more particularly the unique manifestation, Sata, of the truth according to the particular qualification of the worshipper as defined in the second part of the verse. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Advaita Advaya Jnana is called Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11. First, after offering his respects to Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami presents the definitions of the three aspects of the one absolute truth in the first Anucheda. In the next Anucheda, he validates his statements by providing quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, where Maharaj Nimi inquires about the Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan aspects to the Navayogendras. Further, in the third Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami cites the discussion of Lord Krishna with Uddhava in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, where Lord Krishna describes how different worshippers accomplish their goals by worshipping Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The Bhagavat Sandarbha focuses primarily on Brahman and Bhagavan, and the next Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, discusses elaborately on the transcendental nature of the Paramatma and qualifications required for his manifestation. Hence, from the Anucheda 4, the discussion is limited to the Brahman and Bhagavan aspects of the Absolute Truth. The Anuchedas 4 and 5 describe the qualifications for manifestation of Brahman and the Anuchedas 6 and 7 of the Bhagavan. Overview of Adhikaranas. Okay, so you're just dealing with two Adhikaranas here?
Yes.
Okay. Adhikarana 1, Anuchedas 1 through 3. The definitions of the Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan aspects of the Supreme. Adhikarana 2, Anuchedas 4 through 7, qualifications for manifestation of Brahman and Bhagavan. Okay. So, Adhikarana 1, definition of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Adhikarana Prakashika. This Adhikarana defines the three aspects, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, of the one Tattva. The general definition of the three aspects is presented in the first Anucheda. The one continuous entity, whose very nature is bliss, Advaya Jnanam, is called Brahman when there is a sense of oneness rather than variety, caused by the possessor of the Shakti without distinguishable Shaktis. Or when the truth appears in a general way, in the consciousness which is unable to grasp variety in the Sarup Shakti of the Lord. This entity is called Paramatma when he acts as the monitor of the Jiva. The supreme entity is called Bhagavan when he is realized as the manifestation of the principal form, possessing Shaktis which maintain the Lord's inconceivable qualities by the Shakti emanating from his Sarup. And so, depending upon how we're approaching and appreciating the Lord, he's going to reciprocate. So if you can only appreciate a certain amount of Krishna, then that's how much you'll see. So in Brahman, then you're going to see a certain amount. Right? So either as you've limited because there can't be beyond that, or you're not really interested beyond that, or, you know, whatever is the reason that is there. You don't have the knowledge of beyond that. You don't understand the Shaktis. Because we're saying Brahman, the unlimited. So we're going to take that means without energies. But the point is if it's still Krishna, that means he's the energetic. And so energies are there. But just as he is manifesting in a general way or a generic way, his Shaktis are also manifest in a generic way.
Right.
Yes.
We speak here about the devotees and the impersonals and everybody else. Mm-hmm. But if we take only the devotees,
right,
who do it accept Bhagavan as their primeval,
yes,
Lord, but still they can only partially relate to that. It's not that they're interested in Brahman as such philosophically, but more on their, you know, their day-to-day life.
Yes.
So what would be their concept?
Generally, you'll see more for devotees that will be Paramatma.
Like the order supply of
Paramatma? Yes, like that, because you have something, Krishna, please, you to do this or that, or protect us from this or that, or, you know, please make this happen, or, you know, these kind of things, or someone does something wrong, oh, that's against the rules, and so, you know, Krishna won't be happy, but that's his Paramatma. You know, that kind of a thing. So, because the Brahman and the generally Paramatma is the one that's means, how you say, most see that, but then when it gets when you push it, then it goes to impersonal. Well, for us, we're looking like that, but if you get into it more, we'll go to Bhagavan. Right? So that'll be kind of the difference between those who have actually surrendered to the Lord in the Parampara and those who haven't. Right? But you'll also see is that within Brahman, there'll be also a difficulty there, which is not a problem, right? Is that if they can't really relate to Brahman and that and don't deal with it, that's fine as long as they're accepting the Paramatma aspect, because that's how he's regulating everything anyway. But how everything is non-different from Krishna and he's pervading everything, that we'll accept, but we'll take that as Paramatma, because he's in every atom, between every atom. So we get that aspect is there. But because of coming from impersonal backgrounds, then the problem is if we get too much into the Brahman aspect, we can get a bit distracted, and is that it doesn't make sense to us like that. So we see is that it is a usable function for devotees is how Krishna is pervading. So he's pervading everything but it's Krishna who's doing it. It's just like, let's say you're sitting in the room, right? And you see sunlight coming in through the window onto the floor, but you can't see the sun. But when you see that sunlight, what will you think of?
Sun.
The sun, right? It'll just be automatically. But all you're seeing is the sunlight, right? So the impersonalists, they think that's all there is the sunlight. They don't think there's a sun. So that's a problem. So because we know that, we'll think of Krishna. And so that's the whole point here, is that the Brahman and Paramatma is you're always connecting Brahman to Paramatma. I mean to Bhagavan. Bhagavan is a source. It's his manifestation. So we don't not see him. Does that make sense? So it's a higher level of understanding Brahman, because it's Advaya. It's non-dual. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So both Tattva and Bhagavad Siddhartha are based on this verse, on this Vedanta Tattva Tvayadas, is that correct?
I think that they're both based on that.
Yes, at least the beginning, then it goes more on explaining how Bhagavan is superior to Brahman.
Yes, later, but in the Tattva, he also mentioned Tattva.
Yes, Vadanti Tattva. The first part of the verse is the Tattva Sandarbha.
Okay, the first part is the Tattva Sandarbha, and the second part is the Bhagavad Sandarbha. Yes, there's so much in one verse, right? And this is, he's keeping it concise. Yes. Doesn't want to overwhelm us, right? Yes.
Ma Shiva Goswami, he wrote this Sandarbha in a certain order.
Yes, it means you go through the satsandarbhas have an order. Yes. Because you're going through is you're using the same principle. It's the dasa mool, but it's given in the form basically of the Upanishadic, the chit achit ishwara, sadhana and sadhya. But you, it's also establishing the tattva sandarbha establishes praman. So you have to get that, because otherwise, what's going to be your angle to understand this? So we'd have to establish Srimad Bhagavatam. And from Srimad Bhagavatam, that it's about pure devotion. Or actually, even pure unalloyed devotion, that of the, you know, the Brajabasis, how they see it. Then you're going to look at it in this way. Like that? Does that make sense? So then you're going to see, you know, the Lord and His three features. And that will include all the other aspects. Because in dealing with that, you'll include the jiva, you'll include the mysterious energy. It's always being explained according to Chintaveda Tattva. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, it works very nicely. So all things about establishing Krishna as the Supreme Absolute, right, that's in the Dasamul. Then as the Lord of the energies, and that, so that's Paramatma, he regulates, and then as the Lord of Rasa, or that he is Rasa, and that's Bhagavan. So these three features. But in explaining that, then the level, the position of the jiva, position of the material energy, that relationship is all explained. So it's a very clever combination between that Upanishadic and the Dasamula. Like that. Yeah.
Also to remind ourselves that first he made all the sandarbhas, wrote in one book, which is called Bhagavad Sandarbha. Then he categorized into six, out of which Bhagavad Sandarbha is the second one.
Okay, so originally...
It's called Bhagavad Sandarbha.
The whole thing. Sandarbha. But he wrote it as one sandarbha or six?
It was actually Gopal Gautama Goswami's work. Then he elaborated on that. Then he categorized into six. But it was called Bhagavad Sandarbha before, the whole shed sandarbha.
Okay. But it was in, but when it was called that originally, was it in six parts, or was it just, it had these six aspects within it?
I think it has six aspects within it.
And then it was divided.
Divided.
Okay. So Jiva Goswami divided it.
Yes.
But the original work was, you said, Gopal Bhatta.
Gopal Bhatta Goswami did, but Jiva Goswami elaborated on it, because he said it's not continuous.
Okay, so then he wrote an original work like that, like Vyasadeva wrote the original Bhagavatam, and then he expanded on it to bring out the points. Okay, nice.
Actually, the verses, Bhagavatam verses, are stitched together, so that's why the name is called Bhagavata Sandarbha. Sandarbha means stitching together,
okay.
And Bhagavatam is Bhagavata verses.
Okay, so it's taking all the verses from Bhagavatam and putting it together. Okay, nice. Okay. The description of the three aspects is elaborated in the second Anucheda by quoting from the 11th canto containing the inquiry of Maharaj Nimi to the Navayogendras. Here, Pipalayana Rishi answers to the question of Nimi Maharaj by describing Bhagavan as the Supreme Lord Narayana, who is the cause of the whole creation, maintenance, and dissolution. Brahman as that entity who exists independently in the three stages of consciousness, dreaming, wakefulness, and deep sleep, and Paramatma as the entity who enters the body of living entities to enliven the functions of the body. Right, so it's the same person who's doing all this, but he just uses the different features, because he goes into the heart, he goes in as Paramatma. But he's then existing throughout the levels of consciousness of the jiva, he's doing that as Brahman. Because right, you're just pervading that aspect. But then when you're dealing with the individual living entity, you know, overall, then he does it as Paramatma. Right? But who's doing that? Bhagavan.
When devotees approach Krishna and they deal with him as Paramatma, we used to say that actually Krishna responds as Bhagavan still.
He's Bhagavan, but if you're dealing with him in that capacity, it means he's always Bhagavan. And being a devotee means we're surrendered to Bhagavan. But if we're dealing with his Paramatma, he'll reciprocate in that way. But it's him doing that. So it's not he's reciprocating as Bhagavan. Bhagavan is reciprocating as Paramatma. Does that make sense? You know, just like Radha and Krishna are reciprocating as Lakshmi Narayan. Because the only reason we're doing the artik is because we're supposed to. You know, so we're there, we're worshipping, we're doing our service, you know, on the order of Guru, and so we want to please, and so we're doing that. But it's based on the regulation. So they'll reciprocate. It's Radha and Krishna reciprocating as Lakshmi Narayan. It's not that it's Lakshmi Narayan. No, it's Radha Krishna reciprocating as Lakshmi Narayan. Because we're the devotee who's dealing as if it, according to rules. Is that something?
I think yesterday the first Premanjana Chirita Bhakti Vachana was mentioned that exactly matches.
Okay. Yeah. So it's just according to that point of how they surrender, how they see. But the point is it's always Bhagavan who's doing that. But depending upon our, if we don't know Bhagavan, then he'll take care of it in his other features. But as the devotee, they know Bhagavan, and so therefore it's Krishna who's taking care. But if we're only seeing him on a lower level, he'll just deal on that level. Right? Because that's his vow. Yes?
When you say that Paramatma is like a monitor, what is the exact meaning of monitor?
Monitor here means he's regulating or controlling. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Is that like that? Mm-hmm. So, in other words, you have your interests, and the idea is the living entity trying to fulfill these interests is not natural for the living entity. So then the living entity, only by taking up devotional service, can they actually be happy, right? And so the living entity being part and parcel of the Lord, then they are, it's natural for them to be in that position of interaction and serving the Lord. So, therefore, Paramatma, the whole material world is created by Paramatma. And then, depending on his three features, and whether it's the overall Mahatattva, it's a particular universe, or it's a particular living entity. And so then he monitors their application of their desires in such a way that it gradually will bring them back to Godhead. Right? So that's there. So, one, they can't be satisfied in just dealing with the external energy. They have an idea that they can, but they can't. So even that then Krishna is regulating with the modes of nature, and that so that they actually think it's possible. But then at some point they'll start to doubt. When they doubt, then they'll come in contact with bona fide spiritual masters. See, just by doubting, that can't produce spiritual understanding. So that's the difficulty, is that we see with the scholars, you know, either whether they're by, you know, the impersonalist, you know, the mental like this, or just academic scholars, then they think by creating a doubt they'll understand everything. But it may work within the material world, just like what would that principle be on? Right? So means if we go back to like that, why would doubt then make knowledge better? Or reveal knowledge? Right? What's the origin of that? Right? Means knowledge is Krishna. Right? So doubt or lack of knowledge is being separated from Krishna in this form. You know, you're with Krishna in another form. Right? So the point is the separation then brings about, when you comes together, then more happiness. Right? But they're only seeing Krishna as knowledge, so he'll only reciprocate on that platform. But what they're not seeing is that is that they're working with mundane knowledge, that's all they know. So you can only use mundane knowledge for mundane knowledge. It can't be used for spiritual. So when you actually doubt the concept of material knowledge and its validity, or material life and its validity, then you come in and you're looking for an answer. You know, it's just not like you doubt and then you take up impersonalism. But you doubt and wonder what's beyond as the soul. So then that brings you to Krishna then arranges as Paramatma that you come in contact with the bona fide devotees. Does that make sense? Then contacting the bona fide spiritual master, one understands then one has, now you can decide whether you want to take up that spiritual position or not. Or you just appreciate it and you get some Ajñāta Sukriti. Does that make sense? So this idea is that, no, by this academic method you can understand anything, even transcendental knowledge, is totally bogus. Because it's a different thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like saying, I'm going to understand how the motor works by using, this petrol engine, how it works by using my chopsticks. You know, chopsticks may be very good for eating certain things and all that, but not for figuring out engines. But that's the problem, is they don't know, they just think it's knowledge, so therefore they have access to it. No, it's a different kind of knowledge. It's made of something else. So you have to know the elements it's made of to be able to discuss it. Right? Does that make sense? If I'm going to discuss, let's say, architecture, I have to know the elements of architecture to discuss it. If I want to know architecture and I teach you, cooking, you still won't know architecture. Even though it's knowledge. So the whole point is material knowledge deals with 24 elements and their combinations under the three modes. So the spiritual is not under that. It's not dealing with these material elements or modes. So there's no access because you don't have the knowledge. And it's not just the words, because the words are also material. Right? So when it's imbued with the chit potency, now it takes on the spiritual concept. That's why mundaners can read Bhagavad Gita and not get anything, and we can read it and understand Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's important to appreciate how it's Krishna who's doing this. It's Krishna's desire about the material creation. And so therefore, then the living entities then can deal within that. But Krishna, as his full personality, doesn't need to be there to regulate the living entity in the material consciousness. Paramatma is enough. Right? And even that is not Mahavishnu or Garbhadaksha or Kiradaksha. She only has to manifest that much potency. He's complete, but he only has to actually deal in that much. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say you have some government officer. And he can do so many things, but in one capacity, all he does is sign a paper. So he only has to manifest as much of his ability as to be able to sign the paper. His management ability, his people skills, his understanding of government, his, all these things don't need to be used, even though he has them. Right? Does that make sense? So then he's just the guy who signs. So as Paramatma, then, he's there, he regulates. Then the living entity has a particular desire. According to that, however he's dealt in the past, according to what's appropriate and what's not, right? In other words, since the whole universe is about going back to Godhead, that means the proper activities within the universe are the activities of devotional service. But devotional service is not just activities, it's the consciousness in which you engage those activities. So the living entities are trying to be prepped that they'll be comfortable performing devotional activities. Mm-hmm. Right? Then when they have an interest on why I'm not satisfied even though I'm doing the right thing, then it's because you're not doing devotional service. So they'll come in contact with devotional service. Does that make sense? Then they'll be doing the proper activities with the proper consciousness. Does that make sense? And so before that, then if they're pious, they do the proper activities without devotion, or they may do improper activities without the proper attitude. Right? So either way, both are considered wrong. But the one is progressive, that is useful if they do come in contact with Krishna consciousness, easier for them. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, if we're from the West, and we go to bed at 12 o'clock from being at a program, what time will we naturally think to get up in the morning?
6.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so just, it'll be... He said a time that matches a little bit farther north on the, how do you say, the... Is it? Latitude. So then, does that make sense? But in India, that means just they get up at 5, they get up at 5. It doesn't matter what time they go to bed. It really doesn't. Because they're always regular, so if one day that they don't go, it doesn't affect them. Because they're so regulated. Does that make sense? So, therefore, they can do their regular things. The sadhanas have some programs here and there, and just maintain the sadhana, the morning program. After being there, going to bed 11, 12 at night at the program, they're all there in the morning chanting the japa, you know, and after Mangalartik and all that, they all sit down there in the temple room, and they sit. And for 2 hours straight, they just chant, and no one falls asleep.
Strange people.
Yeah, very strange. So that's the benefit of piety, that they have a regulated life where they're following the lifestyle of devotion, though they're not devotional. So whatever we may say, those people that come from those backgrounds, this is a benefit when they take up devotional service. They don't take up devotional service, it's just a nice waste of time. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And soon they will have to reappear in the places where it's not so nice.
Sorry?
And soon they will reappear in the places where it's not so nice.
Yes, and then they'll just gradually go down like that. Yes, because they have enough piety to maintain human life, but not enough to maintain it in the mode of goodness. So that's how you get, if you're not born in India, but you're in human form, that's how you got it. What is that? Does that make sense? Because the Western lifestyle, the next life is not human. Like that.
Arguably, that life isn't human.
But yeah, that's. You want to be technical, but you know, a human form of life.
Fair enough.
Like that. So depending upon how whether it was human life or just human form, but it was something, then you'll see. Then that's where they'll take birth within the non-Vedic environments. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's this is, I think, explained in 11th canto. Okay. Okay. So we're good on all this. Yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that the super soul therefore is regulating, and if you're pious, then you want something and you have the credits for it, you can get it. You know, it's just like you want to buy something. You have the money, you can buy it. Right? But if you don't have the credits, you can't buy it. Or you can get less of it. You wanted a nice car, you ended up with a bicycle. You know? But, you know, you have wheels. You have at least that much you have. You know, you had that much piety. You know? Yeah. Does that make sense? So, that's what he does. And so, because he's there, then he regulates the pranas work, the life, you know, the life airs work, the senses work, how good the senses will work. All that thing just depends upon your previous you know, activities in dealing with. You dealt with the senses properly, you have better senses. You didn't deal with them properly, you have less better senses. You know, and if you really didn't deal with properly, then, you know, like some of the animals, they had missing senses. You know, like worms don't have eyes. You know, stuff like that. So, yes.
When Indian people come outside, they might be conscious of traveling. Their behavior is
can be, no problem. So they just go down quicker. But you see, those who maintain it, they do very well. Right? So those who, having, you know, practiced, you know, that proper lifestyle in India, go to the West, and then they continue practicing it there, you'll see that they do better in their studies, they do better in their work, they just move through the system much better. So even if devotees want more money, more facility, nicer family life, then the lifestyle we use, that is the system. You know, the whole Varnashram, it is the system. But not understanding that, there's always the idea that sinful, you know, how you say, pushing the edge, you know, living on the edge, like that, that will get you more. But that just burns the candle at both ends. You know, so if you call that more, you know, we're getting more light by burning the candle at both sides. Yeah, and I'm getting double value out of it. No, you'll get half the value.
Okay. I remember the devotee in the ashram, they said if you pray the before you sleep or the morning Krishna and saying thank you for waking me or thank you for speaking to him for that help, it tells people we have more and more energy and chakti coming to the temple.
More energy. Yes, because I mean Krishna is the source of energy. But it should be done to please Krishna. The reason you'd have more is because it pleases Krishna. Means in the Pancharatra, one's supposed to, before going to sleep, review the day's activities and then offer what's offerable to Krishna. And then naturally, as you review the activities, you see how much is offerable, how much is not. Then you have a determination the next day to make it a little bit better. Then when you get up in the morning, then you are, you know, have that determination to try to serve Krishna and please Krishna. And so that's the Pancharatric system. So if you do that, it's nice. You know. So you even see as, you know, I'm not sure that various, but, you know, the various religious systems, they also kind of have a concept of this, you know. Okay. The explanation proves how the Supreme Lord Bhagavan, who is beyond the material creation and its original creator, is the complete manifestation, whereas the Brahman and Paramatma, being the partial manifestations of Bhagavan, are incomplete because of their limited function pertaining only to the material world. Right? So when Prabhupada mentions, Brahman and Paramatma are only functioning in relationship to the material world, though they're above the material world and transcendental, but you only see them in the context of. The spiritual world is just Bhagavan. You just deal with Bhagavan. Does that make sense? So, Prabhupada explains that in the second canto. The difficulty comes up is when we say it's a concept connected with the material world, unless you word it very nicely or carefully, then devotees will thinking you're saying Brahman and Paramatma are material. They're not. It's just that Krishna, to manage the material world, he only has to come in these features. He doesn't have to be Bhagavan to manage it. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. In the third Anucheta, the three aspects are presented in relation to the Siddhis as follows. One who concentrates his mind on Vishnu, Paramatma, the Lord of the external energy, consisting of three modes, in the form of time, obtains Ishita, having power over the jivas and their subtle bodies. The yogi who concentrates his mind on the form of Narayana, known as the fourth factor, Bhagavan, obtains the mystic perfection called Vasita, not being influenced by the gunas, since he possesses my qualities. One who fixes his pure mind on me as the impersonal Brahman attains the greatest happiness, wherein all his desires are completely fulfilled. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:15, 15-17. This description illuminates on the fact that the one supreme entity is manifested as Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan based on the qualification of the worshipper. In other words, Krishna is saying that. You meditate on this aspect, and this is what you get. You meditate on that, you get there. So he said, greatest happiness, like that. So it's just a matter of how it's dealing, but the point is then there is the happiness of dealing with Krishna as a person, which is way beyond that. But since the material world is based on Brahman, therefore everything comes up from there. If you understand Brahman, then all the how the mechanics of the material world work, they work properly. Right? So that makes sense. Hence, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan represents the three aspects of one tattva, the supreme truth, with increasing grade of excellence in realization. Right? Because the Brahman is incomplete, right? You know, except with its connection to Bhagavan. Paramatma is incomplete except with the connection with Bhagavan. When we see how Krishna is coming in this, then it becomes complete. But we just see on their own, it doesn't explain everything. That there's just Brahman, then how does all everything happen? Right? Brahman is the basis of it, but unless there's Paramatma, you can't really explain the creation. But why would there be creation unless there's Bhagavan? Summary of Adhikarana. Vishaya. The single supreme Absolute truth is manifested in three aspects called Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, Shamshaya and Purvapaksha. If Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan represent three different aspects, then how can they be called one truth? What is the cause of three manifestations instead of one? Uttara. The three aspects are describing the various aspects of one supreme truth. The one supreme truth is manifested as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan according to the qualification of the worshippers. Siddhanta. Hence, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are the three aspects of the one absolute truth of which Bhagavan is the complete manifestation and Brahman and Paramatma are partial manifestations. So you have one entity, right? But if you're dealing with a certain feature of the Lord, you know, it's just like you have one person and then they have their foot, right? So the foot's not the complete person. But at the same time, it's non-different from the person. The person has the foot. But if all you understand is the foot, you haven't understood the whole person. Does that make sense? So, he has unlimited qualities. And so that unlimited form of those unlimited qualities, that's Brahman. He regulates and controls everything in the cosmos. That's Paramatma. But it's Bhagavan who's doing that. So he only needs a particular... Like to pick something up, you only need your hand. You don't have to use your whole body. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. I told you that. Yeah, you put the chi into it. You know, you know, from the foot, you know, coming up. You know, then you bring it back. You know. Yeah. What's that? That dance style is called popping or something?
Break them.
Oh, yeah. Pop locking.
Pop locking. It's within breakdance, but it's the lock part.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a science.
It's a different levels of realization.
Yes, different levels of realization. Yes. You were somewhere in that.
Explaining that the Bhagavan contains all three features.
Yes, yes. So just because one feature is functioning doesn't mean that the person's not there. Or that the person can't have these different aspects. So that's the difficulty, is these arguments come up because they think for it to be all one, then there can't be any variety. They can't understand that you can have transcendental variety. Why? Because they're only dealing with mundane intelligence. So they don't have the capacity. That's the whole point. That's the one point that the intellectual does not want to hear, is they don't have the capacity to understand. That's, you know, that's just the way it goes. Ooh, we changed how the anuchedas are.
So when you say that the supreme truth is manifested according to the manifestation of the worshipper. Can we say that the devotee and the acharya are trying to change our qualification?
Yes. Yes, they're trying to uplift our consciousness that it comes to a higher platform. Yeah, I just heard all the... Hear all the... Like someone playing on marimbas or something. It's the elephants. They have some wooden... Yes,
they...
Yeah. Yeah, if they were on stilts, they wouldn't be as smooth. Yes. Yes, so that's the whole idea, is that we're dealing in the material world, means that on a good day we're dealing with Paramatma and Brahman. But generally speaking, all living entities are dealing with Brahman on a platform where they don't know it's Brahman. They're just dealing with the pervasive aspect of Brahman, the qualities, the pervading qualities that are there, and then appreciating that, coming in contact in the authorized way. And that authorized may be that we're following according to Shastra or not. Generally, if we follow according to Shastra, there's a concept of Paramatma, the control, but whether we think he's eternal or not, that's another thing. So there's some concept, and then some understanding of Brahman. But if we're not coming from Shastra, then generally it's just hit or miss. It's found that if you do certain things in a certain way, it works. And if you do it in another way, it doesn't work. Does that make sense? So it's just, they've just with time figured things out, and then with time the modes change, it gets lost.
Yes.
Like that, and then people start all over again as if it's the new thing, and whoa, we just figured this out. Yes. And, you know, just like, what is it? I think in the 1700s, then, you know, after Enlightenment, when they could freely think and all that, then they came up with the thing of the elliptical orbit of planets, and aren't they so intelligent, even though that was already figured out, you know, 1300 years before. You know, with people without telescopes. They just knew math so well that they just figured out that's how it has to function. You know. So that's the thing, is that it just becomes again, and then again we think, oh yes, I'm figuring this out. You know, it's like every teenager, they're figuring out the whole universe that no one else has ever understood. You know, all these idiots that you call adults, now, you know, they as a teenager have worked it all out. And, so, you know, it's just the standard thing. Okay, Anucheda 1. Having described in a great way the truth as Advaya Jnanam, Vedanta Tat Tattva Vidhas Tattvam Yajjnanam Advayam. The speaker describes more particularly the unique manifestation, Sata, of that truth according to the particular qualification of the worshipper in the second part of the verse. Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan Iti Shabdiyate. Advaya Jnana is called Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.11. In other places in Srimad Bhagavatam and in other scriptures as well, this one tattva is designated as three, sometimes as Brahman, sometimes as Paramatma, and sometimes as Bhagavan. This does not refer to the jiva according to the knowledge that Vyasa obtained in Samadhi. This is explained in the text itself. First, Brahman and Bhagavan will be discussed in the Sandarbha. The three realizations are placed in a specific order to indicate the grade of excellence. So we're seeing Brahman in context of Bhagavan. Then we'll see Paramatma. Then we'll see Bhagavan. The meaning is this. The one continuous entity whose very nature is bliss, Advaya Jnanam, is called Brahman when there is a sense of oneness rather than variety, caused by the possessor of the Shakti without distinguishable Shaktis. So he's the possessor of Shakti, but you're not distinguishing the Shaktis. So therefore, you just say it's all one. But for us, we're distinguishing the Shaktis. That's why we can see that, why does the metaphysical plane of the primary creation work the way it does? Right? And why is it always the same? Right? That's explained. Is that every creation is exactly the same. Right? That's why Narad Muni in this universe says it's the same as the last universe. Right? Because the Brahma didn't come through, but he came through. Right? And he's saying it's the same. And when he's describing his life then, we don't think, oh, this is different from now. It's the same. So why is it the same? Because Brahman has qualities. And so based on those, how that functions, that's then how we see the creation is. Right, and that's regulated then by Paramatma, right? That manifestation is there, and in what situations the individual living entity is going to experience which manifestations of these qualities of Brahman. Right, but when you think Brahman has no qualities, then you only understand that Brahman aspect, because even our understanding of Brahman is still Brahman with Bhagavan and Paramatma. We're still seeing a connection there. Right? But we may not connect it together in the thing, but that's what we're dealing with. Otherwise, why would it work? Why is it that what we call a moment, that means when you touch that eternal position, something is correct there. And so you touch the Lord at that point. It means we're always in contact, but you're aware of it. And so that moment, then that gives an experience, and then we base our whole endeavor on that. Does that make sense? As I was saying, you know, like the what do you call it, the typical, and then their eyes met. Mm-hmm. You know, now if he was looking at something else, then it wouldn't work. Right? They have a similar nature. You know, so all the things necessary for it to function are in place. Right? And then it works.
Because that's a special moment.
Yes. Yeah, like that. So that's the whole thing. So our life is based on these moments. But the thing is we don't know that what it is that we come in contact with the eternal platform. That's why it feels eternal and it'll last forever and everything's perfect and everything like this. When in reality, no. Does that make sense? So wherever it is, that person, they go out and in nature, just seeing nature, then they have that feeling of the awesomeness of nature or whatever it is like that. Or, you understand? Whatever it is, where they have that focus, they appreciate, because it's all Krishna. There isn't anything that's not. That's the first verse of the Bhagavatam. I mean, the Chatur Shloki. It's all Krishna. And so that's then what we're dealing with. But not seeing it that way, then they'll work out how to get to that. And so they'll try to find those moments. Like, jumping off the Hoover Dam on one of those bungee cords. There might be a moment there. Who knows what that moment will consist of. Absolute fear or this or whatever it is. So the point is they're looking for trying to generate those moments. Well, before they just followed a very standard kind of method. But then there's the idea, if I go outside of that, I'll get more. They don't get more because they have to go more and more extreme. People before just followed the regular stuff at work. Like that. So that's the thing. And so even though they're trying to get more, they get less. Yeah.
Maharaj spoke about these moments in the future. It seems that they also...
Yes, because then... But we're contacting Krishna, who has that aspect. He is eternal. He is Satchitananda. We are. That's why we can relate to that better. That's why the experience there is greater than our moments dealing with Brahman. That's why we can move beyond it. So that's what you're doing. You're just adding those up. And then it gets to the point where it's not a moment. It's eternally like that. You know what I'm saying? We're taking it that these are the greatest moments. So if that's all that you were, that's the position you're always on, right? And from that source, it just gets greater and greater and greater. So that's why I say it's unlimited. Yeah. So that makes sense. Yeah. Because we don't know, so we're in ignorance, so it's just kind of... Yes?
Well, can we say that when you speak about the moment, it's about one special attribute of Krishna?
It's one attribute, because that's what you're looking for.
Like beauty, like opulence?
Yes, like that. Any of the six opulences, yeah. Or their derivatives, mm-hmm. or combinations, or anything like that. Whatever it is in something... It's just like, let's say, in fashion, then it'll be aesthetics.
Yes.
So something, the combination is just so perfect for the person, yes. the moment, that everything, then it all matches, and then there's that moment. You know what I'm saying? Others is that it kind of touches on, and it's better than nothing.
Yes.
So, most what walks down the runway is that, and then it's just a matter of it's sellable or not. Does that make sense? So. Okay. The meaning is this: the one continuous entity whose very nature is bliss, Advaya Jnanam, is called Brahman when there is a sense of oneness rather than variety, caused by the possessor of the Shakti without distinguishable Shaktis, or when the truth appears in a general way in the consciousness which is unable to grasp variety in the Sroop Shakti of the Lord. Right? So then that would be, is that there's a general way you kind of appreciate the Supreme. But you don't actually understand the variety of this, the Shaktis, right? So the one is the sense of oneness, and so then there's no variety. Or there's just a general sense of the Supreme. So you're not trying to say it's all one, but you're not getting the variety of the Shaktis. Like I said, when you're appreciating that landscape, it's one thing. Yes. It's not the variety. Because as soon as you go into the variety, you'll lose that feeling.
Yes.
It's just the overall whole thing. Right? When Paramahamsas have realized bliss, while rejecting the pleasures of Brahmaloka, have attained oneness with that tattva by their sadhana. Right, so they give up, you know, the Brahmaloka means that being on that, then there'll be all kinds of happiness that's there because you're situated in goodness, you're beyond, you know, all the, basically the birth and death and old age disease that everyone else in the universe is having,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, that, yeah. But they're rejecting that happiness for just the happiness of appreciating the transcendence. So this is that level.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That tattva called Bhagawan is explained as having a distinction of the Shaktis from the possessor of the Shakti. Though the two are non-different, or as a manifestation of the principal form possessing Shaktis, which maintains the Lord's inconceivable qualities by the Shakti emanating from his Sarup. Devotee Paramahamsas, who include within their great bliss of realizing Bhagavan, the bliss of experiencing Brahman, realize this form by the internal and external senses endowed with bhakti, which is endowed with the Lord's Hladini and Samvit Shaktis, which are most effective for allowing that realization. Right, so, to understand Bhagavan, you need this Hladini and Samvit Shaktis, that combination that's called bhakti. Right, I mean, in other words, the happiness, you're bringing happiness to Krishna. Right? That's the Hladini. So that's the whole point. We want to please Krishna. That's the Hladini. Then, how are we going to do that? We're going to do that through by engaging the senses in Krishna's service to create a situation or a result or something, an experience that'll be pleasing to him. That's the Samvit. Right? And then how are we functioning there? We have knowledge. That's the Jnana Shakti. Right? So the application, that's called bhakti. Does that make sense? So when we're studying the Vedic literatures to perform bhakti, then we'll call it an activity. But if we're studying the Vedic literatures just to get knowledge and thinking that the knowledge will produce bhakti, that's not bhakti. That's just jnana. You know, so then you'll get a scholar.
Yeah.
Right? Because something, just by having the knowledge, it'll work. No, it's applying the knowledge that makes it work. It's not having the knowledge. It's not having the money, I have everything. It's when you spend the money, you get things. Does that make sense? So scholars are intellectually really rich, externally really poor. That's why people have funny comments about that. Right? They don't use it. Riti, Srila Jiva Goswami gives a detailed definition of Bhagavan by quoting from Bhagavatam and Vishnu Purana before proceeding further. Since the discussion on the multifarious purposes of Bhagavan is the main subject for this sandarbha. Thus Jarabharat says, the wise say that the truth is beyond the gunas, contains everything including liberation, is one without a second, is all-pervading, is Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan, and is Vasudeva. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.11. Manu speaks to Dhruva. When you are 5 years old, by performing pure devotion to the Lord, who is the soul within, unlimited, full of bliss, and endowed with all energies, you gradually cut the strong knot of ignorance concerning I and mine. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.11.30. Right, so this is Manu trying to get him to perform his duty. How is that? This connection to devotional service. Right? So it's not just rules to follow rules. Right? The verse shows that Bhagavan is bliss itself, ananda matre, endowed with all shaktis, upapanna samasta shaktau. It is clear from this that Bhagavan is an indivisible entity, appearing with full manifestation, including these shaktis. Whereas Brahman is an incomplete manifestation without appearance of those shaktis. This will be considered in detail later. The word Bhagavan is explained in Vishnu Purana. So, yeah, okay. This Akshara, the Lord, is invisible, without old age, inconceivable, without birth, without decay, indefinable, without material form, and without hands or feet. He is powerful, all-pervasive, eternal, the cause of all beings, without cause, pervading everything but not pervaded, from which everything arises. The wise know this Lord. The supreme abode is Brahman. It is the object of meditation for persons desiring liberation. What is described in the scriptures is this most subtle, supreme abode of Vishnu. The very Sarup of Brahman is called Bhagavan, the form of the supreme Atma. The word Bhagavan denotes the first imperishable being. Vishnu Purana 6.5, 66-69. The syllable Bha means the bestower and the maintainer. The syllable Ga means the giver of prema, creator of qualities in the devotee and the cause of going to Vaikuntha. The six Bhagas are complete control, influence, good qualities, wealth, knowledge, and renunciation. The syllable Va means the indestructible Lord in whom all beings dwell, and who dwells in all beings. Vishnu Purana 5.6.73-75. Yana Shakti Balaishvarya Virya Te Jams Yase Shata Bhagavach Chabda Vachyani Vina Heyer Guna Divihi. The word Bhagavan means that he is complete with power of mind, omniscience, power of sentence, power of body, influence, control, beauty, and is devoid of all inferior qualities. Here, as in the previous description, the main element, viseshya, and the descriptive elements, viseshana, should be considered. Some descriptive elements indicate absence of inferior qualities. Arupam pani parad ya sam yutam. He has no form and no hands and feet. Indicates Brahman, the main element alone, without descriptive elements. Vibhum sarva gatam. He is powerful and all-pervading. In other words, describe the Lord with his qualities. Or arupam can mean not having a material form. Pani parad yasam yutam can mean a denial of hands and feet produced by assembling a material body. But this does not deny the existence of intrinsic, eternal hands and feet. Vibhum means he is endowed with all powers. Vyapi means he pervades everywhere. Avyaptam means that no other entity can cover him or extend beyond him. Taretad Bhagavad Vachyam Sarupam Paramatmanaha means the Sarup of Brahman is called Bhagavan. It does not indicate that the word Bhagavan is to be taken metaphorically in its relationship to Brahman rather than literally. It means that's the form of Brahman. Not that Brahman, then when he has a form, you want to see the form, then you call Bhagavan, but otherwise then Brahman's just cool on his own. No, it means that the actual form is Bhagavan. So therefore Bhagavan's extension is Brahman. The word Bhagavan defines Brahman, just as the word Ganga specifies a particular river. Ganga does not specify something other than a river, such as a bank. Similarly, Bhagavan refers to Brahman and not something else. One should explain the meaning of, right, so when we say Bhagavan, means Bhagavan. Does that make sense? Yeah. So he is the Brahman. Right? Otherwise, then yes, you're talking about the Ganga, that doesn't mean the bank. So in the same way they say Brahman, it meant Bhagavan something else. But no, when you say that, it means. So Brahman means Bhagavan. Bhagavan means Brahman.
It's mainly to address the Mayavadi's conception of Bhagavan is like a Brahman being caught by the Vidya Shakti.
Yes, yes, yes. Good. One should explain the meaning of Bhagavan directly from the syllables of the word. Thus, the syllables Bhaga and Va are explained in the Vishnu Purana verse. The word Neta in the Vishnu Purana explanation means he who allows one to attain prema, the result of bhakti. Gama Yita means he who allots attainment of his planet. Shrashta means he who makes his qualities appear in his devotees. Maintaining the universe, another mean of Shrashta, and other such qualities are indicated indirectly through other qualities. The word Bhagavan has been analyzed as the simple syllables Bha, Ga, and Va, with the affix Van, possessing. However, the syllable Va is omitted in the final word. Instead of Bhagavavan, the word becomes Bhagavan. Bhagavavan. Yes. Sanskrit's so kind. Right?
So sometimes we, in the scripture it is said that some living entity can be called Bhagavan.
Yeah, it just means he has so many great qualities.
Yes.
But that only you only have that if it's in connection with the Lord.
Yes.
So Narad Muni can be called
yes.
Bhagavan.
Yes.
You sometimes see Brahma called Bhagavan or Shiva called
yes.
Bhagavan,
yes.
like this. But otherwise you wouldn't. So if they have, they're trying to say they're God, they have all great qualities, but they are not devotees of the Lord, then you can't call them Bhagavan. Hence the gentleman who, living down the street from a particular gentleman in Pune, called him up one day and said, outside your ashram it has the word Bhagavan, and I want you to take that off your sign. Because from my house, I have they used to be in the military and now they're not?
Veteran?
Veteran, yes, but the Indians have a term for that?
Retired general?
No, it's a word just used here, whatever. Oh, well, whatever, he's a veteran. He still has his rifle and he's a sniper. And he has a direct line of sight to him sitting on his seat when he gives class. And I'm not sure. I think the next day the sign was changed. So he took it very seriously. So, yes. So unless one's devoted to the Lord, then this quality is not used like that. You know, Bhagavan, Narada, and no one has a problem with it because he's a devotee. But if he was claiming to be God on his own, then you know, this Punjabi gentleman might call him up. So. Yes.
And Narada Muni visits the palaces of Krishna in Dwaraka.
Hmm.
So first Krishna glorifies him as Bhagavan.
Yes.
And after that Narada Muni is in return he glorifies Krishna.
Yes.
All these qualities are coming from you. Actually, you are the real Bhagavan.
Yes, yes, yes. So it's coming from here. It's just reflected. So then you see. Yeah, because actually you see it, tell him there he's Bhagavan. But then he goes and sees the power of Krishna. Then you actually are very clear he's Bhagavan. Yes.
Also among the incarnation of the Lord, then the Avesh Avatar, then there are Vibhutis also. So anybody who reflects that Vibhuti, technically can be called as Bhagavan. Because it's
yes, but otherwise you just say the Vibhuti. So it's just we have something. Yeah. That'll all come up with Sanatana Goswami, no?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I haven't got there yet.
Yes.
Yes. The word Aishwaryam means he controls all. Footnote 1. Now the verse starting Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashasa, Shriya is analyzed. So that's also the Vishnu Purana. That's the next one. Okay. Oh, because we just got the English, no?
Mm.
Like that. We just got the...
All the verses are given at one place.
So that's the next one after this Jnana. No, he'd already did the Ba one. Okay. So that means that, oh, this next, okay. So.
Actually, the whole Sanskrit is given in one go, the order of which Jiva Goswami puts the verses.
Okay.
So Maharaj generally explains, sometimes he puts the quotation, sometimes he doesn't put. We in one sense remove everything off, unless it is very important.
Okay, okay. The word samagrasya should be taken with each of the six words. Viryam means having influence like gems and mantras. Yashas indicates fame for his good qualities in body, mind, and words. Okay, so fame is the good qualities. Shri means having all types of wealth. Jnana means he is omniscient. Vairagyam means he is not attached to any material object. Ingana means defined. Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita lecture the following. Bhagavan means, what is Bhagavan? Aishwarya. Aishwarya means riches. No one can be richer than Bhagavan. We have got our ideas of richness. I may be rich, but you are richer than me. Someone is richer than you. Someone is richer than another, another, another. You go, make proceed. But it just goes on and on and on. Okay? When you find out the final richest person, that is Bhagavan. So even if someone is just after, you know, wealth, if he just keeps going, he'll get to Krishna. Right? Aishvarasya sama, samagrasya, all riches, not that partial. One may have 1,000, another man 1 lakh, one man 1 crore, but no one can say, I have got all the money. No, that is not possible. But Bhagavan has all the money. Aishwaryasya, samagrasya, viryasya. Similarly, strength, bodily strength or power. Aishwaryasya, samagrasya, viryasya, yashasa. And similarly, reputation. We are also reputed, but nobody can be reputed.
No.
I guess more than Krishna. Just like 5,000 years ago, he spoke this Bhagavad Gita. And he is so reputed that Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, and still it is running on. Not only in India, but we are traveling all over the world. There are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita. So he's so reputed. So Aishwaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashasya, Sriya. Vishnu Purana 6:5:47. And beautiful, the most beautiful, Krishna, most attractive. Yashasya, Shri Jnana, knowledge, the book of knowledge, which he has given, this Bhagavad Gita, there's no comparison. There is no second book in the whole world which contains so full of knowledge. So Jnana and Vairagya also. In spite of all the property of Krishna, Krishna doesn't care for this material world. He is busy in the spiritual world. Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. He is busy in Vrindavan. He has many servants. Just big man has got many secretaries, servants, they look after. Similarly, in this material world, his representatives, Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar, they are managing the affairs of this whole universe. But he is enjoying in Vrindavan. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. He has no concern. He doesn't care what is happening here. But it does not mean that he doesn't care. But he has no anxiety how the things are being managed. When it is mismanaged, then sometimes Krishna comes in his Vasudeva form, not the original Krishna. Original Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Padam ekam na gachanti. He is always in his abode. Chintamani prakarasadmashu kalpa viksha lakshabriteshu surabir avipalayantam lakshmi sahasra satasambhrama sevyamanam govindamari purusham tamahang bhajami. He is very much adhered to his cows, Surabir Abhipalayantam, and he is surrounded by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, these gopis. He is surrounded. Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam, Brahma Samhita 5:29. We are praying goddesses of fortune to have some favor, but in the spiritual world, Krishna is served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. This is Krishna's position. So if you study from material point of view, when Krishna was present, he proved that he's Bhagavan. And Bhagavan means not a big beard in meditation. Krishna never became Bhagavan by meditation. When he was on the lap of his mother, Yashoda, he was God. The Putana came to kill him, but Krishna killed him. In this way, if we read the life of Krishna, he proved Bhagavan. And not only he proved himself, but all others, great authorities, accepted him, Bhagavan. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnuswami, Nimbarka, lately Lord Chaitanya, all of them accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Arjuna, he also, when he heard from him Bhagavad Gita, he accepted him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham Shashvatam, Bhagavad Gita 10:12. Srila Prabhupada Lecture, Bhagavad Gita 2.1, Ahmedabad, December 6, 1972. The word like Sambharta and Bharta mean that the Lord possesses qualities of maintaining, etc. Instead of meaning Sambharta van, he possesses a maintainer. Just as conjugated verbs or inflected nouns express the state of being, pachati, it ripens, also means it exists in a ripened state. Right? Because otherwise, unless it is, how does it do? How is it it's doing something? When Bhagavan is explained according to the meaning, possessor, van, of all bhagas, or qualities, jnana refers to the power of the Lord's antakarana. Shakti is the power of the Lord's senses. Aishvarya, control. And virya, influence, were previously explained. Teja means beauty. Okay. Asheshata means altogether. Bhagavach chabda vachyanti indicates that these qualities are the actual qualities of the Lord, not metaphorical words. The affix van, possessing, indicates that these are eternal qualities in the Lord, not created. Just as Bhagavan was explained as a full manifestation of the tattva, Paramatma manifests or can be explained as the same tattva when he acts as a monitor of the jiva. Though the three words Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are generally interchangeable in meaning, this above has been explained with the intention of indicating their chief meaning. Right? So you can use any of the terms to mean any of the positions. But the point is that here he's been giving the chief definition. So that way you can identify the three features of the one Advaita Jnana. Right? Sutta speaks this verse. Okay. Riti. In the next Anucheta, the same topic is elucidated by citing from 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Maharaj Nimi inquires about the three aspects. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan to the Navayogendras. Anucheta 2. This topic is expanded through questions and answers. Nimi says, Narayanad Bhidhanasya Brahmanah Paramatmanah Nishtam arhatam arhata no vaktum yuyam hi brahma vitama. You, being most knowledgeable of the Lord, should speak about the sarup of Bhagavan. Narayan, who is also Brahman and Paramatma. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.34. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Hearing about dedication to Narayana, the king then asked about the form of Narayana. Please speak about the sarup, nishtam, of Bhagavan called Narayana. Later it will be said Narayane, tiri ya kye bhagavach chabda shabdite. The devotee concentrates on the fourth form, Bhagavan, called Narayana. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.15.6. He is your deity. You know about his sarup by meditation, as taught by your guru. But he is also Brahman and Paramatma. I am asking how this one form can also be three. The meaning of the question is this. Narayana Bhidhanasya refers to Bhagavan, since the two members of the group of the three, Brahman and Paramatma, are mentioned here. Bhagavan is equated with Narayan in the following. When the primeval Narayan accepted the form of the Purusha, he created the universe from the five elements, produced from himself, and then entered within the universe by his own portion. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.4.3. O Lord, ran out of time, so we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.